A Night of Mysteries. William and his older brother Robert had been invited to a fancy dress party at Hadley Grange. The inclusion of William in the invitation was an inexplicable source of mystery and irritation to Robert, but since several of the local belles, whom he currently admired, were certain to be there, Robert acquiesced. He insisted that they should go to Hadley in his two-seater car, which gleamed and shone on the outside, but which was apt to display an unreliability at inopportune moments. The two of them set off, Robert wearing a white Pierrot costume with wide frills and enormous black velvet buttons that he secretly considered extremely becoming. William wore his much-loved Red Indian suit. When the car came slowly and jerkily to a stop on a lonely stretch of road, William preserved a masterly silence. Robert started the car again. It leapt forward jerkily, wheezed, then stopped. Robert got out of it, his face set and desperate, remarking casually, "It just wants a minor adjustment, I expect." He disappeared into the engine for a few minutes, then returned to his seat and pressed the starting button. A loud grating sound followed. The car leapt forward, then came once more to a sudden stop. Robert got out again. William broke his masterly silence. "Are you going to do another minor adjustment?" he asked. Without replying, Robert dived beneath the car, and there followed various tremors and rattles and bangs, punctuated by gasps from the desperate Robert. After a few minutes, he returned to his seat. "I think it'll be all right now," he said casually. Once more, the car bucked wildly as it determined to unseat its two occupants, but made no further progress along the road. Yet again, Robert got out and dived beneath it. At last, with a set, stern face, whose impressiveness was somewhat marred by a long streak of black oil, he resumed his seat. This time it moaned feebly when the starting button was pressed, but it no longer struggled, or even beyond a slight quiver, stirred. Robert's once white Pierrot suit was now crumpled, mud-stained, and streaked heavily with black oil. But of this he was, for the moment, mercifully unaware. "It's probably something quite simple," he remarked with an unconvincing attempt at nonchalance, "if only one knew what it was." William again broke his masterly silence. "It's not really very far to walk from here," he said. It was then that Robert's eyes fell upon his costume, and his face froze into a mask of horror. "I can't possibly go like this. I can't possibly. You'd better go on alone. You'd better be getting on, or you'll be late. Tell them I'm ill. Say I've got flu." "Well, flu's a bit ordinary," said William. "Suppose I say you've got pneumonia or heart disease or something a bit more interesting." "Do as you're told," snapped Robert. "Say I've got flu." It was evident that Robert was bitterly disappointed and humiliated. William summoned up all his powers of determination and ingenuity. He was determined to go to that fancy dress dance, and he was determined that Robert should go too. There must be a way. William glanced around at the winter landscape. Lights shone through the trees here and there. "Just a minute. I won't be long." And he set off down the road at a run. With no actual plan, William ran on down the dark road. At the end of the road there was a small pub, and outside the pub was a motorcycle whose owner was evidently inside the pub having a drink. William stopped. A brown paper parcel was tied onto the back of the motorcycle. Through a tear in the paper, a piece of gaily striped material could be seen. William examined it. "Well, there wouldn't be any harm in taking the parcel to the nearest street lamp, just to see what it was." No one was in sight. He did so, and cautiously inspected the contents. He drew in his breath sharply. The parcel contained a complete harlequin's costume with a short cloak to match. There was no doubt about it. It was a gift from fate. He bundled it up under his arm and ran back down the road to Robert, who arose blacker than ever from beneath the car. Panting, William held out the costume. "Look," he said simply, "I've got you this." But where have you got it from? Stammered Robert, open-mouthed with amazement. William's mind worked quickly. If he told Robert where he'd got it from, Robert would insist on his taking it back at once. No, Robert must be deceived for his own good. Well, said William slowly, just as I was going up the road, I saw a man at a gate, and he sort of spoke to me, and I told him you'd got your Pierrot costume all dirty, mending the car, and he said he'd got this old costume upstairs, and so he fetched it down and gave it me. I say, gasped Robert. How kind of him. Which house was it? The one at the corner. Oh, yeah, I know, yeah, it's called the Elms, isn't it? I think it is, but I'm not sure. Well, I must run and thank him before I put it on. No, you mustn't, said William urgently. Well, why not? I can't explain, said William. No, you mustn't. A flash of inspiration came to him. Well, you see, he said he was an author, and he was very busy trying to get to the end of a chapter in his book, the one where they catch the villain, you know, and he's alone in the house, and he has to answer the door himself, and he mustn't be disturbed just because of that. Oh, yes, said Robert reverently. Robert had a deep respect for authors. Yeah, yes, of course, yes, I quite understand. But I'll go round first thing tomorrow to thank him. Well, he said he was going away very early tomorrow morning, said William, with another burst of inspiration. Somewhere a long way off, Jerusalem or something like that, so it's no use you going. I'll just take it there and leave it with a note, shall I? Well, I better change quickly or we shall be late. Robert wiped his face with the clean handkerchief that Mrs. Brown had carefully put into the pocket of William's Red Indian suit and changed into the harlequin costume. It was a well-made costume that fitted surprisingly well, with a cloak and mask that hid all of Robert's features but his chin. They set off quickly through the darkness towards Hadley Grange. When they arrived, the party was in full swing. Robert sought out the local bells, while William made an early and prolonged visit to the refreshment buffet. A little later, William came across Robert standing with a group round the fire. William's attention was caught by the words, "The Elms," and he froze into immobility.
"Yes," said a thick-set, middle-aged man dressed as a pirate. "Yes, I've simply given up trying to do anything with my garden. It's shut in by trees on all sides."
The Elms, did you say?" said Robert, eagerly.
"Yes, the Elms,"
said the pirate, as if resenting the intrusion of this unknown youth into the conversation.
"Well, the house at the corner of the common?"
"Yes."
"Oh, I say," said Robert. "Yeah, I'm so glad to have this opportunity of thanking you."
"I don't know what you're talking about."
It fits me quite well, doesn't it?"
gushed Robert, displaying his gaily striped legs.
"What? Does it? I haven't really noticed."
I hear you're making an early start for Jerusalem tomorrow morning," said Robert pleasantly.
"What on earth are you talking about?"
But Robert was burning to prove his gratitude by showing a friendly interest in his benefactor's concerns.
I hope you managed to catch the villain before you set off this evening."
The pirate's face became suffused with an angry purple, but before he could speak, one of Robert's bells appeared at the door of the dance room, and Robert leapt off to follow her as she disappeared towards the buffet. The buffet was at the end of the passage. Robert walked gaily towards it. When he'd almost reached it, a man stepped out of the shadow of a curtain and confronted him. He was a large, burly man dressed as Henry VIII. A mask hid his eyes, but the mouth was an aggressive, ferocious slit. He spoke in a voice that matched.
"How much longer did you want me to wait for you? I thought you were never coming."
Robert gaped helplessly.
"Well, come on now you're here," continued the man. "Follow me, and don't make a noise or I'll wring your neck."
Looking down, Robert saw that Henry VIII held a small pistol in one hand. The hair on Robert's head seemed to raise itself slowly and stand on end.
"Come on!"
The man began to creep down a passage at right angles to the one that led to the buffet. Hypnotized by horror, Robert followed the man as he crept up a small winding back staircase. Cautiously, noiselessly, the man opened the door of a bedroom and entered. Robert followed. The man turned suddenly on Robert.
"Come on here, you darned lout! Why are you standing gaping? I've never known the chief send me such a fool to help in a job. Here.
The man snatched up an attaché case.
Look sharp now. Hold it open.
Robert obeyed, and the man emptied into it the gleaming contents of a jewel box, whose lock he'd been picking with quick, deft movements as he spoke.
That's all we want here. Take it down to the car. Then you get off on your motorbike back to the chief and report. Go on in front of me. And remember, I've got a gun if you try any funny tricks.
The whole thing was like a nightmare. The pistol propelled Robert down the staircase, out at a small side door, and on through the kitchen garden. The perspiration was standing out on Robert's brow and trickling down his nose. Suddenly, an uproar arose in the distance. Shouts were heard, and lights seen through the trees. "Let's search the shrubbery!" shouted a voice. "They can't have got far. Have they taken much? All Moyna's jewels!"
"It's your fault for being late, you darn fool!" hissed the man. 5 minutes early would have made all the difference. Take the stuff to the car and drive off through the park. None of them are on the park side. Here, put this on."
He threw his dark cloak over Robert's gaily striped costume.
"Drive straight to the chief. I'll follow. Get on, Carter!"
Robert didn't know where the park was. He didn't know where the car was. He didn't know where anything was. He ran simply to get away from the man with the pistol. His cloak came off, his mask came off. Still he ran. Suddenly he found himself in the middle of a group of people. He dropped the attaché case. It fell open.
Why, it's Robert Brown. He's got the jewels. I say, Robert's got the jewels.
Oh, Robert, how splendid of you. How did you manage it?
Where's the thief, Robert?
Panting, gasping, Robert pointed vaguely behind him.
Well, he's probably got away, said someone. And anyway, now we've got the jewels back, it doesn't matter so much.
Oh, I say, Robert, it was splendid of you to tackle him alone. Absolutely splendid.
Where did you find him? The poor boy's absolutely done in. Take him to have a drink. Then he can tell us all about it when he feels better.
Willing hands assisted Robert to the hall, installed him in an armchair by the fire, and supplied him with restoratives. He was beginning to feel slightly better. He'd certainly be ready to tell them the whole story in a minute or two. He'd never be able to make them understand it, though. He didn't understand it himself.
You see, he began slowly, I was just on my way to the buffet and just happened to step out onto the lawn for a breath of fresh air when I saw this chap skulking through the trees with the case. I sort of knew he was a thief, so I ran after him and set on him. There was a bit of a fight, of course, he concluded modestly, but he soon ran off.
A babble of hero-worshipping voices arose from all sides. Someone was holding up a glass and saying, "Here's to our hero, Robert Brown." Loud cheers and strains of, "For he's a jolly good fellow," rose on all sides. Robert's mind went back over the evening. It was simply chock full of mysteries, beginning, now that he came to think of it, with the mysterious production of the fancy dress costume. Yes, he must have a word or two of explanation with William. Robert looked at William. William was gazing at the ceiling, as if lost in thought. His face wore that expression of shining innocence that his family never saw without a sinking of their hearts.